Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
In from the race lead, Pipo Dirani in the Wheel and Engineering sponsored Action Express 31 car then. Fuel going in, a game of patience so that it's frustratingly slow at times, although still only a 33-second pit stop. Stationary that was, so mightily impressive from a well-versed, well-practised team. And once again, the 31 car is on the move. I didn't actually grab the lead advantage for Pipo Dirani, but it was probably 2 or 3 seconds. One man that might be able to answer that question is Richard Westbrook, who's just bailed out of the chasing car, number 5, now with Andrew.
He's taken his crash helmet off. Just a little debrief here with his engineer. Just give him a little while to... Oh, Christian Fittipaldi, actually. Wow. What can you say?
Yeah. We took a big gamble with the tyres then, so... Yeah, now the sun's coming up, it's...
Probably, like, were you double stinting?
Yeah, and obviously the others were on a single stint, so hanging on for dear life. But obviously it gave us track position, got us... It was a net gain. So Lloyd's got new tyres now, so we can just go, go, go.
Christian, how are you doing? Right. Thanks very much. Richard needs to sit down, actually. You can tell he's been working very hard. Westy, brilliant job, mate.
And Christian Fittipaldi not wanting to mention too much either, but very good of Westy to give us a little bit of a secret line in terms of their strategy there. I suppose from a strategic point of view, it doesn't really matter now because it's been done and the rest of the team's probably worked out what had happened from the slight drop-off in lap times. But that does explain why Pipo Dirani was able to catch Richard Westbrook at, what, a second a lap, maybe slightly more than that at times. Hanging on for dear life was the quote from Westy. But as he says, they've now given the new driver, Loic Duval, brand new Michelin tyres, or new, slightly scrubbed perhaps tyres. And they will see the benefits of that in a few hours' time, perhaps.
They will. Now, we talked to when do you do certain changes you're going to have to make during the race. The inception, McLaren had been right in the lead of the GT. D class, that's having a brake change at the moment in the pit lane. Now is their time. It's very late in the race with 4 hours to go. Maybe they just kept on waiting. Maybe that's what got them up into the hunt. Obviously, this longer pit stop for Frederik Schandhoff will drop them down the order, so the order will change. It's Jan Halen leading GTD, the number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche. His advantage is best part of a minute, 50 seconds over Niklas Nielsen, the number 21 AF Corsa Ferrari. So the complexion keeps on changing. The other Ferrari all eyes are on is the 62 car. That's in the GTD Pro class because Alessandro Pierghidi is hunting down Matt Campbell, pushing him very hard indeed. That's the battle for second place in that class. But Dennis Olsen, we didn't get to speak to him because the team didn't want us to, but KCMG, their Porsche is leading the way, slightly out of cycle, but the battle between Ferrari and Porsche is for second and third place in GTD Pro, and it's super tight. In fact, every time I've looked at that Pfaff Motorsport Porsche, the number 9 car, it's been in a battle with another car for class position ever since the start of the race.
Yes, it's one of those cars that, you know, those people who are very popular at parties and always got company. It seems like the number 9 car has just been like that during the race as well, whether that be a scrap for the lead or, in this case, fending off the third-placed car in the form of Rossi Competizione's Ferrari, the 62 of Alessandro Pierguidi. Ben Barnico, fourth. Couple of minutes back, actually, but still, no, won't be on the lead lap because of the difference between the nose of that Lexus and the rear of Alessandro Pierguidi. So there's about a lap between those two cars. Dennis Olsen on lap 5:90, leading for KCMG, as Bruce mentions. 0-1, well and truly off the strategy of everybody else. Remember, number of laps back because of earlier problems, but Renger van der Zander has come into the pit lane for a fuel stop, and we can hear from Mike Rockenfeller now with Andrew.
Well, Mike, so disappointing for you. I mean, you're really in the middle of it with a big chance of this. Just recap for us what happened.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were trying, obviously, you know, to go through the night without any issues. We all try hard. Unfortunately, Jimmy had a contact with the GT. I didn't see it. And we had very bad damage, very severe on the rear right corner. So, we lost like 23 laps and basically game over. Yeah, it is what it is. It's endurance racing and, you know, we all win together, we lose together and we come back and try again.
How do you motivate yourself when you're driving after that?
You know,
professionalism.
Well, of course, it's fun. I mean, it's an honor to drive these cars in Daytona, so I think there's not much you have to motivate me. I enjoy every lap out there.
Great attitude, mate. Thanks very much.
Rocky, who has had so many stories to tell through the years in many DTM campaigns, particularly at the Le Mans 24 Hours, of course, but also, you know, making him name for himself more and more at Daytona, and as he says, thoroughly enjoys the experience of a lap, something that he first tasted back in 2004, I reckon. So he's been coming to this race meeting at the start of the calendar year for so many years. Flying Lizards Motorsport, they managed a third place finish in the GT class back in 2004. So mightily experienced. Oh, neck and neck now coming onto pit road, and that's the 60 Acura from the DPI class versus an LMP2 car. So to watch the stop, Andrew Marriott. This is Simon Pagenaud, Andrew.
Yes, just not running this time, walking up to the car. A new set of tyres going on. I see they haven't scrubbed those. Fuel is going in. No driver change, I don't think, as I get closer. Just cleaning the screen, still more fuel. And Jack, of course, trying to win this race. 10 years since they won it before with amongst the drivers. Justin Wilson, so a very good stop from the team. Can't believe it, boys. And down here, where they accelerate away, there's about a centimetre thick of raw Michelin rubber where they accelerate out every time. We did say it yesterday, but I think I'd like to repeat this, that in the WEC, if you spin the tyres as you leave the pit lane, you get a penalty. But here in America, in IMSA, you get a round of applause.
It's actively encouraged, isn't it? If you don't make a right old racket and leave a plume of smoke, then you don't win many fans that way. And yeah, that's the difference in culture, you perhaps might say. Coming racing in the States, very much set up for the fans' perspective. But so many big teams, of course, too, that desperately want to take the race win. But they're all racing fans beneath it all, and love the sights, the sounds, the smells of full-out motor racing.
But it's also what all fans like, and it's so many times greater at the end of an endurance race, is the release of pressure and the applause at the end. And don't forget, if Meyer-Shank Racing, the car number 60, which is running in the lead at the moment, can go on to win this event, what, not even a 12-month, what effect about an 8-month period it would be for Michael Shank and the gang, winning the Indy 500 last year to this. And those images are fresh in my mind of the celebrations at the Brickyard last May. Absolutely phenomenal result for the team. And if they can double up and take victory here, Four hours to go, or very nearly, but they're at the front of the race. But let's see how they go. We have got different race tactics, but always as you get towards the end, it becomes much more similar. And those like the number 5 crew from JDC Miller Motorsport, we just had Richard Westbrook reveal that he did 2 stints on a set of tyres. That's bought them some advantage. And now the number 5 car is out on the track on fresh rubber. Loic Duval, well, he's the fastest driver out there at the moment. He's lying third. He's closing in on Pipo Durrani. And, you know, more heat in the track, fresher rubber, rubber that can actually grip. Hurrah! That would be a real favour for JDC Motorsports. And will the others have to take the pain, or will they have enough tyres to make it to the end? Constantly sticking fresh rubber. We know the answer is no to that. It's when they use it. Do a double stint, really.
Yeah, I just wonder whether the crew at Wayne Taylor Racing, the number 10 car, did the same. Let me compare the lap times on average for Richard Westbrook, who did a 21 lap stint and managed the average of at 136.5. Rossi's second stint dropped to a 136.2. So it wasn't very far away from Westbrook. Yes, it was 0.3 seconds faster across a 22-lap stint, but compared to the previous Rossi stint, he did two back-to-back. He lost 0.3 seconds on average. Now, does that suggest it was the same set of tyres for each of those stints? Maybe something for Andrew to chase up. Did the number 10 car running in fourth also double stint its tyres? Without a doubt, it will have been a new set of Michelins for Philippe Albuquerque, who's now taken charge of the number 10 car, running in fourth position. So we have Pipa Nirani installed for a second stint to make that a double. Loic Duval took over from Richard Westbrook, who quite frankly needed to sit down after his second of a double. So Duval takes over there. Simon Pagenaud had only done one 22-lap stint, so he's staying inside the number 60 car for Maya Shank with Kerb Agajanian. And the number 10 car is mentioned now in the hands of Portuguese driver Philippe Albuquerque.
Now, we just had Andrew Merritt describing the rubber being burnt in the pit lane. And Jeremy Shaw, who'll be back in the commentary box in just over an hour. Global Broadcast Centre. He said, he just says, another way, coming via, not by Twitter, but via WhatsApp. We've got to watch all the channels. You talked about spinning the tyres. This is just to clarify things. Coming out of the pit stop, you can't spin the tyres, we pointed this out earlier, if the car is on the air jack, that's an instant penalty. But if spinning them on the ground is fine. In fact, that's the only way to warm them up at the moment. No sissy tyre warmers here, of course, he says, pointing in all sorts of directions. But so thank you for that clarification, Jeremy. Once you're back on the deck, you can spin them all you like. In the air, though, that's a problem.
Yeah, and it was the Dragon Speed car I noticed many, many hours ago now had a problem with that. It was up on the jacks, and I wonder whether the throttle had stuck open, because it was almost in a point where it wasn't even a driver in the cockpit and the wheels were spinning.
That was explained to us by Pascal Ward, the driver who got out at that time, and he said there was a problem with the throttle sticking open, but they'd had a problem with the engine restarting before, so he thought he had to leave the engine on, and he's now being disabused of that as soon as he got out of the car. Don't leave it on, because you could spin the wheels. So anyhow, it's all part of learning, and it just goes to prove, quite frankly, it's no surprise to anyone, but it's worth pointing out, is the fact these cars change through the course of the race, and you often have a problem you have to work your way around. Hopefully not for many hours, but for many a team, if it's a problem that's too big to actually fix, you've got to drive around it. You've got to be aware of that. And we've got which is the car that it's the Gradient Racing Acura running in GTD. They don't have an air jack on their car that works anymore, so they have slow pit stops. It's all problems you've got to nurse around. Andrew, have you got any news of problems down in the pits?
Well, you asked me to check out on Wayne Taylor Racing, so I come to the horse's mouth. Wayne, Westy just got out of the car. He double-stinted the tyres. Are you doing the same thing?
No, we put on a set of scrub tyres for Philippe, and then we're going to decide at the end of this stint whether we'll double. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's pretty strange how that pit stop ended up, because we were actually ahead of a lot of cars purely on speed. But somehow we lost the pit stop and we had the best stop ever. So not sure what other people are doing right now.
Right, have you been in this situation 4 or 5 hours before the end of the race so many times, Wayne, sort of crossing everything, knowing you're in with a shout and it's the same again?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we've got a chance at this. I wouldn't have said that to you last night, but I think we...
You were 2 laps down at one stage.
Yeah, we were 2 laps down, and we weren't making any gains on anybody. They were actually pulling away, even with 2 laps down. But now we seem to be able to be at least at the same pace, and we just have to keep executing and putting the right drivers in the car.
And you said you've got four great peddlers there. Albuquerque always does a great job, and your son, he's always quick, isn't he?
Yeah, Rick is pretty special here. Philippe is, Alex, and Will just come on board with us. I mean, just perfect.
Perfect. Let's hope it's a perfect day when the checkered flag drops. Who knows?
Thanks, me too.
Thanks, Wayne, and congratulations on being Grand Marshal. I think I said to you yesterday, what's the main thing you get? Free lunches.
Yes, exactly. Free lunch, free breakfast.
They often say there's no such thing as that, but obviously a Grand Marshal does bring that reward. Corvette have had a long, long night with their two new-ish Corvette C what are we, 8Rs now, the mid-engine machines, but sort of backward engineers to become GT3 cars to be able to be eligible to run in GT Daytona Pro. But because of an awful lot of work that needed to be done to both the 3 and the 4 overnight, some of the mechanics are choosing this moment to get a bit of shut-eye, just 3 3/4 hours away from the chequered flag. Up onto Speedway Turn 3 will go Pipo Dirani, leading by 5.5 seconds over Loic Duval. It's the two Cadillacs out front, 31 from 5. Then Simon Pagenaud in the 60 Acura from Meyershank Racing, ahead of Philippe Albuquerque, driving for the man we've just heard from, Konica Minolta and Wayne Taylor Racing. Oh, around the outside will go the Wins-backed LMP2 car there. It just about gets its way through. Was that LMP3 car?
It's LMP2. It's car 52, PR1, Mattis.
I'm confused, you see, because Philippe Fraga is driving an LMP3 car. He's a regular with that team.
Correct.
But P2, yes, which is the Riley Motorsports car, is an LMP2 car. So second of the three different layers of prototype we are enjoying at Daytona this year.
And 52 Orica is driven by Nicolas Dampier. He's 33, so over half a minute down on class leader in P2, which is running fifth overall. That's Patrizio Award. We heard from him earlier. He's driving the Dragon Speed USA Orica, but a good, honest battle. But Pato Award, it seems he's just got this Midas touch. No matter what he gets in, he's very, very quick, and no wonder. It's exciting times on the IndyCar scene for the last couple of years. Just the young guns, a whole raft of coming in and really, really delivering. You know, you love a lot of the drivers, but it's great to have a changing of the guard. It always keeps things fresh.
So that purple, orange and white PR1 Matheson Motorsport car scampering its way through the Le Mans chicane, car 52, which is running in second. And Lapierre then with Patrizio Award standing in his way. Lapierre making, it's very gracious there, making some space for Pipo Dirani to get through. Thundering his way through the tri-oval now and leading by 5.4 seconds on to lap 6.38 we go. Pagenaud and Albuquerque only 1.5 seconds apart now, and Albuquerque is quicker, generally speaking, than Simon Pagenaud in this phase of the race, because Albuquerque plucks out a sub 1 minute 36 second lap that time through, gets the gap down to a second to third.
Do I sense the corner of Wayne Turner's mouth just starting to move up into a bit of a smile? He's certainly be enjoying this. But you know what? When you've got someone with the calibre of Philippe Albuquerque at the wheel, he's sort of relaxed. He knows what he's got to do, and he's going to really take the attack. He's had a phenomenal record in the last half dozen years or so in particular. He's really established himself as sort of one of the sports car prototype racing royalty, if I could use such a term.
Nine laps in, we are in the LMP2 lead, by the way. Patrizio Award and Nico Lapierre are neck and neck in terms of their stint distance. Nine laps, soon to be 10 completed. Half a minute separate those two cars in LMP2. In LMP3, it is Kai van Berlo for Riley Motorsport. So that is the car that I was confusing with the LMP2 machine. Riley Motorsports and Wins used to be partners, have been previously, but not in this race. And then the Riley Motorsport Ligier JS P320 being piloted by the young Dutchman, has also Philippe Fraga, Gar Robertson and Michael Cooper in their line at number 74. Lights flashing for Loic Duval to warn those heading through turn one about the traffic, deciding to take the high line around the outside of an LMP3 Ligier and the WeatherTech Mercedes. That's the one in Daytona Pro, so is the number 15 car. And they're all doing a really good job, actually, of being aware that the quicker DPI traffic is needing to get through. Very little time lost for the Loic Duval driven car.
So just running down through the classes, we had that longer pit stop for the McLaren, the number 70 from Inception Racing, and dropped it down the order in GTD, but Frederik Schandorf back on the track and lapping at very good pace back up to second in class. So it's chopping and changing, but not if you're Riley Motorsport, because they're still at the front of GTD, and it's still Jan Halen at the wheel. In fact, he seems to be in that car almost forever. But it's funny how, according to our commentary stints and their driving stints, they can often match up, and you have to actually go and look to see who were the other drivers in the car we didn't get to talk about too much. It's Zach Robichon, it's Ryan Hardwick, and of course Richard Leeds, who we had seen in the car going super well, as you would expect. But that's the number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche leading the class as we get to, got under 4 hours to go, 3 hours 40 minutes almost precisely remain in this 60th running of the Daytona 24 hours.
I'm also speaking of LMP2 a moment or two ago, just trying to get to the bottom of whether Louis Delatraz had to have an extra stop somewhere. He is running in third position in car number 8 in LMP2, which is the Tower Motorsport car, and my figures would suggest he had to come in prior to his scheduled stop and do something like 3 laps, but then come back in again. So I just wonder whether that's taken him not out of the fight completely, but just further away from the top two. It's within 5.9 seconds actually of Lapierre, so that might just be a bit of erroneous data creeping in. 3-horse race, I reckon, in LMP2. A 4-horse race, very definitely, in the DPI category. LMP3 starting to develop into that scrap between Riley Motorsports and the 54 car in LMP3, which is the core Autosport car for this stint, Nick Johnson. And then in GT Daytona, both pro and non-pro, they're about to complete 600 laps in that division. Dennis Olsen leading for Porsche and KCMG from another Porsche, the number 9 of Pfaff Motorsport and Matt Campbell. This is RS2, IMSA Radio, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels, and another clock hour is reached, so 10 o'clock in the morning. Glorious day. It's been a chilly old night, as we waxed lyrical about, and many of those used to Florida temperatures and will not forget this race in a hurry, and not necessarily for positive reasons. Several blankets were required, I'm sure, and perhaps a couple of mugfuls of hot chocolate to get through the evening.
I always feel in any trip that involves a caravan, but more typically a tent, it's not what you take on holiday that makes it or breaks it, it's what you forgot to take, and that could be an issue for people down there, but I'm sure any catering facility would have been doling a lot of hot drinks out through the night. But that seems to be in our rearview mirror, is the one that needs to be looking in his mirror the whole time. This battle's been going on for a couple of hours now, absolutely fabulous. It's in GTD Pro, and it's between the number 9 Pfaff Racing Porsche and the Ferrari, which, hold on a second, where's the Ferrari gone? Alessandro Piaghini's near it on the track, but nowhere near it in terms of times.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Edging away slightly, maybe just for one lap in isolation. Shown as 0.8 of a second away from Matt Campbell currently, as that 600 lap marker is reached. As far as the overall leaders are concerned, they're on lap 641. I mentioned after we'd had 16 hours at this race and reached 500 laps that 750 was well within grasp. Still think that is the case. Predicted lap distance by the end, so at 140 this afternoon, is actually 754 laps. So we've been doing on average 250 laps every 8 hours. And long may that continue, because the first 12 hours littered with yellows. There have been one or two in the next segment of the race, but as I think it was Jonathan Bomarito was making the point, not enough yellows to come back if you were, say, trailing by 10.
Yeah, the first half of the race was peppered with yellows, but they have rather fallen away. And another thing that fell away briefly was my timing screen. That's why I said, the Ferrari's on the tail. That's the 62 Rizzi Competizione Ferrari's on the tail of Matt Campbell in the number 9 Pfaff Motorsport. My timing screen's done that up, but they've been refreshed. And my eyes do not deceive me. There is under a second between them as they fight for second and third positions in the GTD Pro class. But Dennis Olsen leading the way in his KCMG Porsche. But actually, I could just watch these two cars, the number 9 Porsche from Pfaff Motorsport and the 62 Rizzi Competizione Ferrari, ducking and diving as they work their way around the circuit. It looks fabulous. know what, it's much less tiring looking at cars in daylight than it is trying to pick out the headlights in the dark. And they're the other people we really need to give a huge pat on the back to, all the camera operators who just simply are trying to pick up cars by their headlights for not just a couple of hours, but about 13 hours. Easier to pick up the wrong one than the right one. So they're having to really multitask as they try and pick up the action for us. So simply we can follow the race. But yeah, really well done, Cruz.
Nose to tail again between number 9 Porsche from Pfaff and the Risi Competizione Ferrari number 62 there at the Western Horseshoe, about to be lapped by one of the 2G drive by APR LMP2 machines. And that should be done in a very conventional way. Well, having said that, inside of one, outside of the other. But everyone knows the plan there, and he's able to cope with that. I mean, there's such wide expanses at speedways, turn 1 and 2, that you could easily run 3 abreast, in fact, if necessary. Just the 2 abreast was required this time around. Hopping and skipping its way over the curbing at the Le Mans Chicane is Matt Campbell. Alessandro Pierguidi, as if on a tow rope, paying very close attention. And that Ferrari looks slightly more manoeuvrable than the number 9 Porsche in his fate.
Well, well done for picking up the use of the curbs there, the chicane. The team, the drivers have largely been staying off that. I think it's just showing the pressure that Matt Campbell is feeling in that Fab Motorsport Porsche, because certainly we have seen punctures in this race, easy way to pick them up, but ever since they changed the curbing down there, the drivers thought, well, I'm not going to hit those curbs unless I want to. But I think the pressure really is on the Australian. Such a successful run with Porsche since he became a work driver, but he's got to work because he's got Alessandro Pierguidi just half a length down. As he went onto the banking, you talked about as though attached by a rope, but I was thinking as a water skier, he's a long way behind the boat, but now he's just 1.5 car lengths behind as they go through turn 3 and across at the infield. Actually, it's on the infield the Porsche looks better. It's on the banking, on the high-speed part of the circuit, where the Ferrari seems to find its form. But a great, great scrap for the GTD Pro. Alessandro Pierguidi looking here, looking there, not quite ready to make a serious attack, but where's the traffic up in front? We've got the number 3 Corvette about a second or so up the track, but sadly for Corvette fans, with Jordan Taylor on board, that's in 34th position overall, whereas Campbell and Pierguidi are 21st and 22nd. They're second and third in the class, but for Corvette racing, it is depressing, but you just need to keep pounding around. You never know what you'll find on the cars that could be carried forward, could be developed, made better for the next time they go racing at the Sebring 12 Hours.
The Dragon Speed USA LMP2 leader, Pato O'Ward, working its way by those dueling GT cars for second and third. Matt Campbell ahead of Alessandro Pierguidi. There were nose and tail arriving at the back straight chicane, but safely through already O'Ward, judging that scrap to perfection, realising that they'd be up against one another. And there's always the scope, of course, as you're lapping at GT cars, that one dives out of the way of the other. Not aware that you and an LMP2 car are looking to get by, but disaster averted there. Armfuls of opposite lock as the Pfaff Motorsport car approached turn 1 there for Matty Campbell. Great car control though once again.
I think we've seen him vaulting the curbs of the chicane. We've now seen him going right to the edge of adhesion into turn 1. He is being pushed super hard. He's determined not to go away with that. Cars up in front of the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche kicking up the dust in the face of the little kink turn 4 on that infield loop. But it's still Dennis Olsen leading the class.
So Pato O'Ward, Nico Lapierre and Louis Delatraz, who, thanks to Jeremy Shaw on this, we reckon Delatraz has lost about 20 seconds somewhere along the way, and that might answer the question as to whether this car had an extra stop or not. I was trying to suggest it might be a bit of erroneous data that's crept into my various timing pages, but there is further evidence now to suggest the Swiss came in for an extra stop, maybe a stint that lasted only 2 or 3 laps before it came back in again. But that might well explain why it's lost further ground. Maybe it had a penalty, but I've sent Andrew Marriott on a little mission to find out what, if anything, happened there for Tower Motorsport. He'll be following that up very shortly. Dennis Olsen leading after 603 laps rather in the number 2 car in GT Daytona Pro class, and it's Jan Halen leading GT Daytona number 16 Right Motor Sports car. Andrew, quick as a flash, is on the case now with Tower Motorsport.
Yeah, with Ferdinand Hertzberg. You were just telling me a bit of a problem, you had a puncture there.
Yeah, Louis went out on a new set of tyres, and after the first couple laps, we got a front axle puncture, and we had to pit and put a new tyre on, which put us in out of the lead and into third. Yeah, you don't want that, but happens.
You've been having a fabulous run, man.
Yeah, been enjoying myself a lot, and going quick, and having a good time.
I have to say, a great season last season as well.
Thank you, yeah. Cheers.
You were in the DTM for a while before that, remember? You in Formula 3 and so on, Ferdinand. But is this a place you want to be now, sports car racing?
Yeah, I've come to Daytona two times before.
With Jota once, weren't you?
Yeah, so never been this close to trying to win it, and my hopes are still high.
And for the future, WEC, or do you like racing in America?
I love racing in America, but at the moment I only have a WEC plan. So anybody out there looking for a driver in IMSA, give me a call.
Excellent. What's your number?
come find me.
Thanks, Ferdinand.
Ferdinand Hapsburg.
That's the Archduke, remember?
Yeah, yes. And I could go through his full name, but I would probably need about 10-15 minutes to do so. There were an awful lot of sections.
Please do it. I have Googled it. He's got about 10 names, hasn't he?
He has.
And of course, it all goes back to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, his family. And
the Habsburg dynasty.
And yesterday we were having a discussion about royalty. And we remembered a couple, but overnight, funny how the brain works, I remembered Prince Leopold von Bayern und Taxis.
Yes.
Who was a DTM driver.
Poldi.
Another great name. I was going to say Ferdy probably has a Twitter handle, but if he includes all of these names...
Those space for a message.
It would go, yeah, you'd run out of characters. Here we go then, deep breath. Ferdinand, Zvonimir, Maria, Baltus, Keith, Michael, Otto... Antal, Barnum, Leonard, von Habsburg, Lothringen.
What happens?
They were all in the Beatles, you know.
They were, but what happens on the marriage ceremony when his wife-to-be has to go through his full name?
Yeah.
Did I get that wrong? Yes, you forgot the Otto. But he's a great character, and I tell you what, at Le Mans last year, the celebrations when they won P2, you know, in that topsy-turvy, absolutely berserk finale to the race in the P2 class, but he's a guy who's quick, knows how to celebrate, and I think he's a perfect addition to any team. He's great character. You know, all sport needs characters.
Yep, very eloquent as well. Describes situations, good and bad, very succinctly, I think. And like he said, not what you want when you're leading the class, a puncture at that precise moment, but they will come back and continue to fight. Running in third position, only a second away from Nicolas Lapierre now in the number 8 LMP2 car. Pato O'Ward leads the LMP2 class from Lapierre and Delatraz. Then Guido van der Garde. They've lost ground as well in the Racing Team Nederland Orica after spending quite a long portion of the start of the race jostling for the race lead on the pit stop cycles. But it has dropped away now to more likely a two-horse race, possibly if the 8 car can get back into it for Tower Motorsport, possibly back to a three-horse race. But it always happens during a 24-hour race that your favourites at the start can sometimes drop away and not necessarily through any fault of their own.
Another person who had an immensely long name, he raced in the 1960s in Formula 1, always looked too big for his car. Ikuri Masbergen, Porsche racer. It was the great, huge fun character. Carol, go down to Beaufort, but that was only a little agglomeration of his name. I do believe there was a story that he once went out for a bit of a laugh back in the early 60s without a race helmet on, but wearing a Beatles-style hair wig.
I like it. G-Drive by APR have two Oricas in the LMP2 lineup this year, and Andrew Marriott's just spotted one of them going behind the wall.
So Luca, well, it isn't gone behind the wall yet, but Luca Ghiotti is climbing out, and it's on the dollies. So I'm just going to pop round and find out from Luca, who both know he's had a lot of success in Formula 2 recently, but here he is finding out the vagaries of sports car racing. I'm just going to pop over the wall and get Luca and find out what the problem is.
Meanwhile, Loic Duval charging very hard indeed. The number 5 car now out front from Pipo Durrani, and on the pit stop cycle, Duval, I was going to say, is very close to needing to pit stop, but Durrani is in first after 21 laps. Did 22 on the previous stint. Again, his second stint was on average 0.2 seconds slower, but that's not an awful lot of time lost. They are changing tyres again, and after Pipo Durrani did 2 back-to-back stints, does this mean that there'll be another driver change in the 31 and Tristan Nunez most likely to take charge, considering Mike Conway did the stints prior to the Brazilian? Beautiful day again here at Daytona. Lake Lloyd looking like a little bit of a wind. It's rustling up upon it as we go back to the pit lane and to Andrew Marriott.
I got our Algarve Racing boss, Stuart Cox, down here, of course, runs these G-Drive cars. Luca was just telling you what the problem is. It's up on the dollies. So what's happened, Stuart?
Well, the race has started with a drive-through, with a jump start, we thought was marginal. And being our first event here at Daytona, there's lots to learn. And I'm afraid the kerbs and the banking has caught us out, and it's caused us issues with the rear of the car. We've had to put it behind the wall and fix some bits. Unfortunately, with the 68 car, we haven't managed to get enough yellows where we get the laps back, so we're quite a few laps down. Although we're super fast, now we're just going to get it to the end. But the 69 car, we've got a problem with the clutch, where we changed the clutch in the early hours, popped a new one in and a slave cylinder, but we've gone and done it again. So we're going to retire the car, which is a real shame. So.
But have you enjoyed it, the overall experience, Stuart? Would you come back?
Yeah, it's fantastic. We really enjoyed the event. You know, John Doonan makes you feel so welcome, you know, the president of IMSA.
And in the middle of the night, he comes down and says, how are you doing?
It's fantastic. Absolutely unbelievable. He's just a racing enthusiast who loves what he does, and so do we, and we just want to be back for more. But the trouble is, I've got to wait another year, and we've got to go and find the money to do it again, so it's a long wait.
You've been quite good at that in the past.
Yeah, we'll do our best, and we know where we've made mistakes, and they won't happen again.
Terrific, Stuart. Thanks, Ray. It's always entertaining, isn't it, Stuart Cox?
And these are the troublesome years you've got to go through when you're doing your first event, because although it's very friendly in the paddock, you'll do very well to go to a team and for them to say, hey, watch those curves, because you're a rival at the end of the day. They're not going to give you all of the little secrets that it's taken them probably 5, 6, 10 years to discover.
You know, and I also think it's the little transgressions. So Stuart was talking about the jump start, John Fowle, but he said he felt it was marginal. But it's all a question of perspective. And one perspective I've got at the moment is the number 26 Mulner Motorsports P3 car sitting sideways across the track. Not off the track, it's up the escape road, trying to work out exactly what has gone on, but no lights on the car. The car going nowhere fast.
I think this is at the International Horseshoe, and the car's not made it all the way around the corner, but there is a little access route there, concrete surfaced.
Nolan Siegel in the car at the moment, down in, and it's going to be losing position, 35th position overall, but his lap pace was looking pretty good, but clearly earlier problems being got around. But just to finish my point, you know, you can arrive at this race and have a really good result first time around, but that is down probably to having immense luck. It's when things go slightly wrong, it's how we react to them, and then being fully conversant with the rules. It's falling the wrong side of the rule book that it might be seen as a minor transgression, but it's enough to pick you up a penalty. And in racing as competitive as this, it really, really hurts. So I'm afraid you do generally need the early few years of pain before you can really start to finesse, you know, what's happening on and off the track.
And, I mean, no team can eradicate mistakes and errors at your first attempt at Daytona, but it's crucially, it's how you react to them and also log them in the memory banks. I'm sure that will be going down in a couple of notepads for future reference. And as Stuart Cox makes a point, we've made the mistake, but they will not happen again. And they'll come back a lot more knowledgeable, a lot stronger team as a result. Algarve Pro Racing, G-Drive by APR, as they are known on the entry list. And it's good to have a stalwart of European prototype racing, both at Le Mans and in the Championship European Le Mans Series here in the States for the first time. A spin for the Ally-backed 48 car, which is the Ally Cadillac as it's entered, and the 48 car not in the leading quartet after difficulties overnight. Jimmy Johnson is back at the wheel, though. Now, is this an out lap for Jimmy? 48, where is that on the pit stop cycle? Yeah, it's just done 21 laps, so I reckon it is, having just come out of the pits, Bruce.
Yeah, and I'm afraid we can generally point fingers with nobody else involved in that. In fact, three cars came around the corner just behind Jimmy, but I just touched the curbs on the inside and then the tail, just the change of balance of the car there, and the weight was on the wrong corner, and the tyres didn't give really great deal of grip at all. So Jimmy had problems early in the race. That's what put them back, a bit of contact, but they've been going around, you know, all they're going to aim for. They're not going to pick up any of the first four positions unless there's a problem for those cars up ahead. But they're way up ahead. You know, they've got 650 laps on the board. And Jimmy's car, only 628. So he's, what, 23 laps down on the race leader. You don't gain that over the course of 24 hours. You certainly don't get it in the final 3 hours of a race. But a small setback, but it was the big setback that, you know, has really hurt that team.
Yeah, that clash with the GT car on the infield coming through the sweepers at turn two. And difficult to tell from the angles that you and I described it from who was to blame there, but two cars going for the same bit of asphalt, it would appear, one across the nose of another, thought it was clear, in fact it wasn't, and did quite a bit of damage to both cars, but namely to the 48 Ally Cadillac car with a heavily meshed rear right wheel, but it punctured quite a bit of the drivetrain as a result as well. It took them a long time to diagnose that issue and then fix it, of course. Philippe Albuquerque is in from the race lead. Simon Pagenaud, did he ever get to the race lead? Because the two Acuras were running 60 ahead of 10 for a fair chunk of that stint. So Simon Pagenaud is the race leader now, that is for sure. And Philippe Albuquerque in the number 10 car in after one stint. They'll keep him there for another 21 lapper, I'm sure. 136.2 was his average of the 21 laps, and at best 135.3. I reckon there were new tyres put on that car as well. Wayne Taylor himself rather suggesting they weren't yet in the need for double stinting. Perhaps later on they might start to roll the dice a little bit, but they're well in this when last night they were two laps down. And this situation, well, they would have snapped your hand off for it to be back on the lead lap and toying with the race lead, albeit on the pit stop cycles.
Just having a little glance down, the driver who's been doing a supreme job in GTD is Jan Halen. He's just brought the Wright Motorsport Porsche out of the lead of class into the pits, but may yet revert to the circuit, still in the lead. Spencer Pompelli in second place, the Magnus Racing number 44 Aston Martin. We're going through the cycle. Niklas Nielsen not long ago must have pitted. In fact, he's on an out lap now. That's why he's fallen to third in class, AF Corsa Ferrari. But the car that's just made it into the pit lane is the number 60 from the lead of the race, Simon Pagenaud. And that's the car Johnny was just talking about, the Mayershank Racing with Kerb Agajanian Acura. That's been having a really good race. But don't forget, that was a car that we thought for a while was trying to run a different fuel tactic to the others. Remember, it seemed to go in the hours of darkness, the morning, early morning hours here, an extra lap. I don't know if it's still been doing that, though, Johnny, in recent hours. But if you can buy yourself a lap, it adds up.
Yeah, and Jarvis was seemingly hiding cylinders of fuel in his legs, I think, to be able to get that car to the end of each of the stints. Sometimes 23 laps on the counter, and on occasion that would tie in with a caution, but he was for a while able to extend the lap distance by an additional lap, even under green flag. But that was a more standard stint length for Simon Pagenaud, 21 laps, and he will rejoin the race as we go to the pit lane and Andrew Marriott.
Yeah, well, Jan Halen, that was a strong old stint there, Jan.
Yeah, we're just, trying to play the strategy here, saving some fuel and tires and looking after the car for those last 2 hours.
And what's the track condition like now? And it's obviously rubbered up well.
Yeah, it's surprising, actually. I thought I was going to see a little bit more grip out there, and didn't really come to us. So for us, the car felt better during the night, and the track felt better, quite frankly. So hopefully it'll come to us a bit, but either way, we're in a good position right now.
Of course, you had a very good season last year, didn't you? You won the Michelin Pilot Championship.
Yeah, it's good to build on that. We had a good, strong finish to the season, and it's nice to come back with the same group of guys here to Daytona. And hopefully we can keep this up. Still a little ways to go, but fingers crossed.
Now, my old mate Tim Sugden said you were one of the fastest racing drivers he's ever looked after.
That's nice of him to say. He's a good man, and he helped me out a lot when I was younger, so I really appreciate that.
Yeah, because you were in single season, won in Formula 3000, weren't you? And then you came to America, and then your career took a bit of a dip for a while. We didn't see you around that much.
Yeah, it was maybe put my focus into some other things, for a couple of years, and started up a business and did some work for the VW group back in the day. And just good to be back and doing this full time. And again, just grateful to be here with Wright Motorsports, First Form. I've been with these guys now for 7 years, and it's a real pleasure.
You're settled here in America now.
Yeah, this. I don't think I'll ever move back.
That's Jan Halen from Belgium.
Here's a little one.
Yeah.
What's the similarity between Tim Sugden and Jan Halen?
They
both won
struggling.
The Porsche Cup.
Okay.
For the most successful driver across points across the whole season.
Very good knowledge.
Tim was probably wrong, but it seems to ring a bell in my mind at least.
It's good. Run with that. Three wins last year in the Michelin Pilot Challenge for Jan Halen, together with race partner Ryan Hardwick, who is the bronze in this endurance car as well. They took 7 podiums last season and 3 pole positions as well in their Porsche 718 Cayman, the GT4 CS, as opposed to the Daytona 24 car, which of course is the GT3R, the 911 GT3R from Wright Motorsports. So Zach Robichon, Richard Leitz, who put in a really good stint to keep the 16 car in the mix last time around. And is it still actually Leitz driving that? Let's just have a little look. No, Robichon took over. And now leads the class from Spencer Pompelli in the 44 Aston Martin. Now neck and neck between the two Acuras, and Philippe Albuquerque wheeling the car on, pointing in the direction he wants to go. Did he get by? Was there some contact actually with a Porsche on the run down towards turn one, Bruce?
Well, what happened there? Albuquerque was on the outside, Tom Blomqvist on the inside in the number 60 Acura, and then suddenly Blomqvist went, oh my God, there's a GT car right in front of me. Couldn't get around it, had to back right off.
Right.
In fact, to the extent that Philippe Albuquerque had to look in his mirrors to see where his rival had gone, because that was a much, much slower lap for Blomqvist. He actually lost about 10 seconds in that manoeuvre, not just third place overall, but for Albuquerque, did nothing wrong. He was on the outside, but sometimes traffic goes against you, and at that point when they wanted to put the power down going onto the banking, it was a real curse there for Blomqvist. So he's got to put it behind him and see what he can do to settle back down, and his next lap wasn't as good either.
One of these very snazzy auto-panning cameras in the cockpit of the Wayne Taylor Racing Konica Minolta Acura. It spun round then from the direction or what Philippe Albuquerque could see through the screen to spin round and get Albuquerque himself in frame. And then away in the background, I saw, as you said, a GT car and Tom Blomqvist in the 60. And because of that peculiar angle from the auto-panning camera, it did look like the two had made contact on the run into turn one. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. Just a heavy delay for the Meyershank Racing number 60.
It wasn't as much as I described, as Jeremy Shaw ever wise just pointed out. Don't forget, the 60 had just pitted. So Tom Blomqvist, it was a slower lap, that lap. They had position. But of course, on your out lap, again, if you've just taken a few hours away, you've flipped on the TV, checking the timing screens, checking every bit of detail you can get. You think it's a sunny day in Florida, but it's still remarkably cold and notably cold. And if you've seen what weather is hitting the northeastern states of the USA, you'll understand it's pretty cold the whole way up the eastern seaboard. Heavy dumps of snow up there. But for these drivers, they can't just get out of the pit, do the infield section and go, it's all right, my tyres are up to temperature. They're not. They have to really work them. That's why Blomqvist will... Oh, in fact, his next lap, he's gone from 1 minute 38 to 1 minute 35.9. So, yes, he's waited. He's got the heat into the tyres. But Albuquerque is nearly 5 seconds up the road.
Yeah, and within 5 seconds of Pipo Durrani through the last split. So the gap from the number five Mustang sampling car driven by Loic Duval to Pipo Durrani is nearly 7 seconds, then nearly a 5 second gap. It's 4.7 back to Philippe Albuquerque, and Albuquerque to Blomqvist is altering quite a lot because Blomqvist's tyres are still coming in, but he will be back on the same sort of speed as Philippe Albuquerque very, very shortly, as we're going to go back to the pit lane and hear from a certain South African, Jordan Pepper, now with Andrew.
Yeah, we've been following that GTD battle. We were just with Wright, and now we're down at Inception Racing with Jordan. This is a pretty good struggle, isn't it?
It's very heartbreaking, to be fair. We've been amazing, you know. Like the guys have done a faultless job this side of the wall. They gave us a fast car. We've been absolutely killing it, fighting the right Porsche, which is also really incredibly fast. But we had a manage on it, and you know, for 18 hours we've been nursing a gearbox leak from the contact from our LMP3 car early on, and then as we were setting up for the final 4 hours. Fred reported on the radio that he started to feel no brake pressure, and then he lost all brakes, and yeah, we just seemed to have an issue on the front left brake caliper. So we lost 4 laps. It's not over yet, but it's pretty uphill struggle from here to the end, I think.
That's very disappointing to hear, because you're a rookie here. Have you enjoyed it, Jordan?
Loved it, but I would have loved it even more if I could get a watch on my wrist at the end of it. But you know, motor racing's not over till the flag gets waved in the end, and let's see what we can do. Fingers crossed, we're gonna just see what we can do this side on strategy wise. Our hands are tied behind our backs a bit, trying to gain 4 laps, and no one seems to be making any mistakes, so there's no cautions happening. So let's see what we can do. But you know what, if we don't win this year, hopefully we're back next year to fight again.
Obviously, when Bentley closed the doors on their racing, it left you a bit in the lurch, but you've managed to find yourself in a nice position now.
Yeah, look, I had to look elsewhere, had to open up my horizons, and you know what, I've loved this transition into racing here in North America. I think endurance racing, sports car racing over here is just a different caliber, and just a different style, the way it works. And you know, I had my transition year into America last year in GT World Challenge, obviously going to be back there this year, but also getting into IMSA now is just super good for me. It just opened some new doors, and I'm loving it, you know, to race these amazing cars and these awesome tracks with a smile on my face for 24 hours. What more could I ask for?
Wayne Taylor's a South African, you know. You ought to get down there and introduce yourself.
Yeah, actually, yeah. See, they're fighting quite hard there for the lead, so maybe if I'm not the South African to win today, hopefully they are. So, crossing my fingers for them.
Thanks very much, Wayne.
Cool.
Ran at the 24 Hours of Spa last year with Inception Racing. Jordan Pepper, quite a bit of a change from one GT car to another, big Bentley Continental to the McLaren mid-engine, but taking it in his stride, seemingly.
Yeah, totally. But don't forget, also last year he was driving a Lamborghini. He mentioned the GT World Challenge America series. He forgot to mention he actually won it with Andrea Caldarelli for K-Pax Racing. So he's very adaptable. But you know what? Sometimes you look at the body shape of these cars and you get, you know that effectively the Audi R8 LMS and the Lamborghini Huracan are the same car with a different body on it. Of course, they might handle slightly differently, but the engine's in the same position. Mm-hmm. So they can chop and change, but visually it seems anything you step into after a Bentley, or indeed after the BMW M6, is going to be small. You know, you commented, in fact, even though it's not as large looking, the Lexus up on the banking, it looks almost closer to a touring car, as we call them in the UK, than it does to a GT car. But again, in GT racing, I love the difference of shape. I think most fans do.
Variety has always been the big interest for me in motor racing, and we have got that in spadefuls this year. at Daytona. Well, we've had it for years, actually, in the GT3 class at GT Daytona that is outgoing, effectively. Yes, that class is retained, but remember, it's increased for 2022 because of the Daytona Pro element as well. So same cars, but a much stronger driving combination for the GT Daytona Pro cars, those with the red race numbers and the red rear wing end plates and door mirrors too. And it is five of those red numbered cars that are running, 21st down to 25th overall. Matt Campbell in a Porsche, Dennis Olsen in a Porsche, James Calado in the Ferrari, Ben Barnacote in the Lexus, and Dirk Müller in the number 15 Mercedes for Proton USA. So we still have a mixture of manufacturers: Porsche, Ferrari, Lexus and Mercedes.
Right, just news from Gradient Racing. They've been having an ongoing problem. That's on the 66 Acura running in the GTD classes, that they've had an issue with an exterior kill switch, which was shorting and killing all the car's power. So you can imagine that's not a great fun thing to have either on track or in the pit lane. So nursing a problem. Now, a car that hasn't really had any problems at all that we could see, the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche in from the leader GTD Pro. But we're having the time of pit stops. The KCMG Porsche came in not so long ago. In fact, I think last lap just been back out on the track. So they're chopping and changing. But Pfaff Motorsport, it's been a really, really good run for them. But you look at the lineup: Philippe Inazza, Mathieu Jaminet and Matt Campbell. Not surprisingly, they're going well. Andrew, what have you got for us down from the pit lane?
I found Catherine Legg here at Hardpoint. And she's just describing with her hands what's a bit of oversteer maybe, Catherine, there.
Actually, I was describing how I nearly died several times on the outlap on new tyres when during the night. It was so cold and it was so tricky to handle. Like, even going out of pit lane, you had to tiptoe around and you still thought you were going to hit pit wall. So I think most of us who did that deserve a medal, honestly.
I don't think you're going to win a watch this year, but just to sum up some of the problems you had.
Yeah, it's disappointing because, honestly, we have a great car. You know, the team have done a fantastic job, and I think we have the pace to be up there. I don't know whether we have the pace to win it or not. You know, the 16 looks really strong, but it's a learning experience, and we had an incident early on that kind of put us out of contention, but the crew rallied around and worked their butts off overnight to get us back out, and so we will keep fighting until the very end.
I do kind of wonder if they have ladies' Rolexes ready for you.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, sexist comment. Should have said that. Catherine Legg, brilliant racing driver.
And joined by Rob Ferriel, Stefan Wilson and Nick Boole in what on paper looked like a very strong car indeed. But it's not only the straight line and the ability to corner on the infield speed that you need, but you also need an awful lot of luck around here at Daytona. Which can be tricky to find when it's not your year. And I think on another day, she's quite right that they could have certainly toyed with the top six and maybe even gone for the podium as well. Like she says, though, 16 car looking very, very strong this year and might have been still out of grasp even if they'd had a perfect run. So Wright Motorsports doing something right in GT World Challenge last year, as we've already touched upon, and they are, well, get your real-time gap in a moment or two, because Niklas Nielsen, who is a real talent as well, moments away from crossing the line for the 614th time, chasing Zach Robichon. Let's see what the difference is next time they cross the start-finish line at the tri-oval. 9 seconds the advantage for Loic Duval in the number 5 Mustang sampling Cadillac ahead of the Whelan example. So the gap between Robichon and Nielsen is now timed at 47.5 seconds, Porsche to Ferrari. Spencer Pompelli's Aston Martin running in third ahead of the number 32 Mercedes AMG, and that is the car of Gilbert Courtauld Motorsports, or Performance Driving Group as they're known from their sponsors.
You know, I was just having heard what Catherine Legg was saying there, looking at Stefan Wilson's pace, he's running that Hardpoint Porsche 11th in GTD, you know, numerous laps down, but annoyingly for them, the car is running on the overall pace. That's the thing, the outright pacing class, maybe half a second a lap down on Zach Robichon and Niklas Nielsen, who are first and second in the GTD class. But, you know, your car's just got to not have mistakes during the race, not have problems. Easier said than done, but you see how they bite. But to find your car still with, what, almost precisely 3 hours remaining, running on the pace of the class leaders, must be very galling to find it down in 11th place in Cloas. But at least it's still circulating. There are some who are not still going. We had 61 starters, and we're not going to get 61 finishers. You never would.
Well, it wouldn't be a tough enough test, you could argue, if you finished with the same number of cars that you started with. That's why people want to come and master Daytona, because it is such a challenge, even just to get to the end of the 24 hours, let alone with a good result. Arriving now at the Le Mans chicane is the leader in the LMP3 category. Felipe Fraga put back at the wheel of the Riley Motorsports LMP3. So from a manufacturer perspective, it's Ligier that lead that class. They're also second and third. The Duquesnes haven't had such a good run to this point. Best Duquesne is fourth, by my reckoning, with Matt Bell at the wheel of that for AWA with their DO8. Four Duquesnes entered and a total of five Ligier JSP 320s in the LMP3 division.
It does seem that the class at which the battle is closest is that GTD Pro class, just under 6 seconds between Dennis Olsen, the number two KTMG Porsche, and the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche, the red, black and silver one of Pfaff Motorsport, with Matt Campbell at the wheel. But James Collado is the driver closing in behind. He's in that 62 Rizzi Competizione Ferrari, third in class. That's a car that only ever seems to go forward, but at the moment in the cycle it's down in third in class. But two Porsches and a Ferrari, the top three cars at GTD Pro.
That's Bruce Jones joining me, Johnny Palmer, in the Haggerty broadcast booth. It's RS2 IMSA Radio, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. We have had 21 hours of the 2022 Rolex 24 live from Daytona. Just 3 hours remain.